Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 in San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. Torrey pines, as in the tree, not the golf course, is the rarest pine in the entire United States. The wild population is restricted to about 4,000 trees growing in a very narrow strip along the San Diego coast just north of La Jolla. And there's also a population of a variety of torrey pine in a single grove on Santa Rosa Island in Southern California's Channel Islands, just off the coast of Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. If considered alone, the Santa Rosa Island variety of torrey pine is one of the rarest pines in the world, with about 2,000 trees today. So while San Diegans proudly refer to the torrey pine in the names of a local well-known golf course, as well as a high school, roads, businesses, parks, beaches, even a glider port, how much do San Diegans and Southern Californians know about our most special revered tree in these parts? And how many folks are even aware there's more to Torrey Pine State Natural Reserve than just a really nice beach? So joining us today to talk all about the Torrey Pine and the wonderful San Diego jewel of Torrey Pine State Natural Reserve is Darren Smith, an environmental scientist and the Natural Resources Program Manager for Torrey Pine State Natural Reserve and the larger San Diego Coast District of California State Parks. Darren, thank you for your ongoing work in the service of the state and protecting our natural resources. And thank you for making time today for Tree Huggers International. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. This is really, really great. I don't get to do this very often, so it's fun to talk about stuff I really love.
And I've been wanting to do a show about Torrey Pines for the longest time. And I think the best place to start, is there any reason why there are two Torrey Pines, and why are they so far apart? How come one's in San Diego and one's in the Channel Islands?
Oh, geez. Well, that's a pretty complicated question. We just had a recent study with sort of looking at that guy, Justin Whittall up at Santa Clara University, and there's been sort of a mystery with the Torrey Pines of you know, why their range is so restricted. And also, the Torrey Pine is incredibly genetically similar, and that the population at Torrey Pines is nearly a genetic individual. There's very little difference in that population, and then the other population in Santa Rosa Island is also almost a genetic individual. So at some point, what most people theorize is that there was, or hypothesize, is that there was a bottlenecking, and a lot of the trees were reduced in numbers, either due to a human use or due to some sort of natural occurrence, and they don't really have an accurate date or guess at that date, but there's all kinds of hypotheses that are put out there. One of them is that they were used extensively by European Americans, you know, cut down. There wasn't a whole lot of sources of lumber. And the assumption is that there was a broader population all up and down the west coast of North America, and that the climatic conditions changed at some point, leaving these little relics in these special places. The pine was probably a pine that needed a certain amount of moisture and was not terribly competitive with other trees. So a certain amount of moisture to keep it going and happy, but not too much moisture, and that another pine or another species of large tree would outcompete it. And those conditions changed over time, and they shrunk to a very small, restricted area, and there was probably an additional reduction in those populations due to some kind of human usage. That's my guess what happened. I think that's kind of the conventional thought on what's happened.
And so really, the Torrey Pines in San Diego and on Santa Rosa Island, they're cousins, but they're not that similar.
Well, they're actually fairly similar. They're real closely related. I think they're currently regarded as subspecies, meaning that they're I think, relatively isolated in interbreeding, but they're genetically closely related. But in looking at the two, they're almost close enough, I think, and I'm speaking a little bit out of place here because I'm not a geneticist, but it's almost as though the two trees are two individuals, and there are some morphological differences in the two, and also some genetic variation, but the genetic variation is very narrow.
About how far inland did the Torrey Pines, at least in San Diego, go, or have they always just been right there along the coast,
I
on
think,
those bluffs?
You know, the guess is, like I was saying earlier, kind of the thought of their ecology is they do well in these sandstone outcrops and with the coastal fog, And it's probably likely that they're a fairly coastal species, even way back when at their heyday.
San Diegans tend to use the Torrey pine as an ornamental tree. You don't see it particularly far inland, though. Folks might use it in their yard in Del Mar.
Yep. And I doubt that they're very frost resistant. I think that's one thing that probably, doesn't allow their distribution to go very broad. It's funny, the Torrey pine is planted very widely as an ornamental tree, and it, it's incredibly rare, but one of the nice things is we do have sort of a reservoir cultivated population all over the world, and mostly in Mediterranean regions or areas that have similar climates of our own.
So there's nurseries where they'd be growing Torrey pines?
Correct, yeah. I know they're in New Zealand and Australia and probably in Europe as well. Mostly Mediterranean climate regions, and in landscapes, not in natural areas. They're very, very restricted and very only comfortable in a very narrow range of environmental conditions.
But as rare as that tree is, it winds up being used ornamentally all over the world.
Right, which is a nice thing. I mean, we worry because our two populations are so small. If we had a very large catastrophe, like, some sort of strange fire regime where we had multiple fires over a certain number of years, or if we had a bark beetle infestation, which is a very real prospect, or something like that, if we lost our population, we'd probably be able to repopulate through those horticultural plants. And because the genetic diversity is so low, it's probably not a whole big worry that we're losing genetic diversity because we've already lost so much. So there's a possibility. I mean, that's a good thing in having these things planted widely in cultivation, but it is bad in losing, our native population, and guaranteed we do have the largest amount of genetic diversity in a very narrow, small area. It's funny, we talk a lot about the Torrey pine because it is, I've heard somebody describe it as the charismatic megaflora, and they describe animals in the same way that certain biologists like to study things because they're big and charismatic. And the Torrey pine really is the charismatic megaflora of Torrey pines, and actually probably coastal Southern California. One of the things about the Torrey pine is that it's really allowed for the protection of these areas. Torrey Pine State Reserve would not exist if it weren't for that tree. And one of the really neat sort of side effects of that is that it's protected this very, very rich coastal flora that we really don't see anyplace else. And I think that's the kind of modern great value of the Torrey and the people who work to preserve it is that it's protected this whole other very rich ecosystem, Santa Rosa Island included.
I wanted to ask about the different species that are in Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve because obviously there's more than trees there. I've seen giant yuccas there. There's an incredible flower display in the springtime. Could you talk about some of the other unique plants that are found there?
Yeah, it's funny. I think your show is called Tree Huggers International, and my grounding's in shrubs and chaparral ecosystems. So I hope this is the addition of the shrub hugger, because this is what I really love. And
we've had shrub huggers on the show
before. Well, we like shrub huggers. Well, like I said, the neat thing about Torrey pines is it allowed for the conservation of these coastal areas. And two things about Torrey pines makes it really interesting and allows for this giant richness of species and biodiversity in a small area is one of them, it's a really unique area. It's got these big multi-layered sandstone bluffs capped by this hard layer called the Linda Vista Formation and all sorts of varying rates of erosion and stuff. So there's this really interesting geomorphology and geology and soil formation that's happened in this area. Between that and the urbanization that's basically wiped out most of the rest of coastal San Diego and Southern California for that matter, and those two things have made for an incredibly rich and incredibly rare ecosystem with a bunch of plants that you just don't see anywhere else. At Torrey Pines, we have roughly 470 species. 330 or so of those are natives. That's about 20%, 19 or 20% of what we have in the whole county of San Diego, which is a giant county with desert and foothills and montanas. It's real thing. So there's this incredible concentration of species richness in plants anyway at Torrey Pines. That's the thing that I'm really turned on by. I mean, that's the amazing thing. These big, pretty trees have really allowed for the conservation of a very rich sort of system that all occurs within real close proximity. Among those 330 native plant species we have, about 30 of those are considered rare, which is an incredible diversity of rare plants within a very small area. Torrey Pines, in fact, is only about 1,600 acres or 6 square kilometers, which is a fraction, a tiny fraction of the size of San Diego County, and has a huge plant diversity, which probably also equates to a pretty large insect diversity and everything else. One of the things that I said earlier that allowed for all these rare plants in a small area is that we built all the rest of the habitat in the coastal area. So, you know, the stuff that's there is kind of the remnant stuff, and we don't see it anymore. And one of the spooky things about that is plants really don't have a chance to repopulate from anywhere else. They're sort of shut off from their source populations and other populations in the county, and they're separated. So if we lose one, it's pretty difficult to get it to recolonize. And you also lose the genetic diversity of that real coastal stuff we have. California in general is fairly diverse. Even the county, I mean, we get, you know, 14 or so inches of rain up near Del Mar and Torrey Pines. Down at Borderfield State Park, you know, just a few miles down south, we only get about 6 inches of rain a year. So there's some really strong differences, even in a fairly short range along the coast. And that's one of the reasons you don't see Torrey Pines, or you didn't see Torrey Pines up and down the coast, is, you know, is that one spot that had a certain amount of fog and a certain type of soil and a certain type of climate that allowed it to hang out there. And there's a whole bunch of other species that are adapted to those same, you know, pretty focused or narrow conditions.
Do you have any mammals or large animals at Torrey Pines? You have
We do. It's amazing. Cats? We have, you know, we've had all kinds of reports of mountain lions, and I don't doubt they drop in from time to time. The area is not big enough to support a population or a group or anything, but they definitely do come out. And I should also say they were also spotted at Old Town recently and all over the place. They get around. But we do have a resident population of bobcats. We have southern mule deer. We have long-tailed weasel. We have a lot of pretty interesting mammals, and most of the stuff you don't see because it comes out at night. And most of the stuff's kind of restricted to the back part of Torrey Pines. One of the problems for mammals at Torrey Pines, and all species for that matter, all wildlife species, is you have to get across pretty large roads. It's pretty isolated from the rest of San Diego County and open spaces. So whatever gets there has to take their chances with large, wide highways or North Torrey Pines Road and stuff like that. There's only certain species and only a certain sort of pressure that allows certain types of animals to move back and forth. You know, a lot of bird species can sort of make it and string their way across urban places. Some of the wildlife, like coyotes and raccoons and stuff like that are fairly well adapted to urban areas, move real freely back and forth. Some of the bigger stuff, like mule deer, we really have a problem with them, especially in the western part of the reserve, because they have a real hard time making it across North Torrey Pines Road. Even if they make it through in the flood channels and stuff, they stand a real good chance of getting squished on the highway. And something we've always wanted to do is, and this would probably irritate a good portion of coastal central San Diego, but we'd really like to slow the speed down on North Torrey Pines Road or install some kind of wildlife crossing area there, because we really do lose a few deer every year or so there.
And that also divides up the habitat.
Correct. So there are two fewer spaces, or there are fewer spaces in two sort of isolated little places for stuff to hang out in.
If you're just joining us today, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Helm, and joining us is Darren Smith, an environmental scientist and the Natural Resources Program Manager for Torrey Pines State Reserve and the larger San Diego Coast District of California State Parks. We're talking about Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve and the Torrey Pine itself. How long have you been working for State Parks?
I think I've been with State Parks almost 8 years now. I worked in consulting for quite a while before that, and before that for university and stuff. So I've been around a little while. I'm feeling like I'm getting comfortable. I know that's a long time to be on a job, but it's a complicated job, and it's really hard to look at all the different things going on. One of the challenges of being a natural resources manager is you're supposed to be good at everything, and everything's really complicated. So it's hard to kind of narrow stuff. And mostly, you know, they call a lot of what we do adaptive management, and it's really the truth. It's trying to figure out how to fix and nurture things, you know, by learning on the job, essentially.
You aren't just a native of San Diego. You are, I would describe, an uber native. And you've got several generations back in this town.
Yeah, I'm sort of freakish.
You've been around as long as the Torrey Pine has.
Well, I'm not going to say that long, but we've been around a while. Yeah, my family, I'm descended from folks that settled in Old Town and came up from Central Mexico way back when, mostly on my mom's side.
And then you went to school at Humboldt in Northern California, then you came back here for grad school.
Right. Yeah, grew up in San Diego and spent some formative years up in the Redwood Curtain, they called it, and got dragged back down here by my folks and went to grad school back in San Diego, and And I have to say, Humboldt County is absolutely beautiful, and the trees and the landscape, but it has nothing on San Diego County in terms of biodiversity. I mean, this is the best place to be in the world for biology, even though we don't have a whole lot of it left. What we have is spectacular.
This is a more biologically diverse area than Humboldt County.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Even though they get way more moisture and rain up there.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons, you know, all that abundance of moisture and rainfall and stuff sort of allow big competitive species to sort of squeeze out a lot of the little guys. And down here and in, you know, Anzabrego Desert in Southern California, we have kind of a unique system that allows little guys to live amongst bigger guys. So, in San Diego, we have a lot of small, what they call them, belly plants that are a big part of our ecosystem that you don't see, and you don't see, you know, during all times of the year.
Right, you know, the Doug fir is crowding everything out.
Exactly.
When I think of being on the trail in Southern California, even if it hasn't rained for a while during a dry season, pinyon pine, mm-hmm. you tend to smell that everywhere. Mm-hmm. Why is that characteristic to Southern California? That just doesn't grow anyplace else north?
Well, as far as smells, I mean, that's one of the neat things about our region is, you know, most of the stuff down here, especially near the coast, the chaparral and the sage scrub, you know, we have these aromatic species that, you know, have adaptations to fire and all sorts of other stuff. So they have terpenes and really, really interesting, neat smells. And that's something that, you know, growing up down here and spending some time here, you really get conditioned to that smell and scent. And it changes, you know, your first rainfall, you get this powerful scent of the California sage, you know, Artemisia californica. And when the first flush of spring, the plants start putting on moisture and start developing leaves and get a lot of the oils start building up, and you get that strong smell. It's really wonderful. There's an interesting plant, Hymenoclea monogyra, and it only grows mostly south of I-8, and it sort of is a Baja riparian smell, but it's also, you know, driving up by San Diego State or driving down by 94, you get a whiff of it as you're driving by, and it's a really powerful, you know, wake-up to a particular season, and that's sort of a summer plant. For some reason, you can smell it more that time of year.
Do you guys have a problem at Torrey Pines with invasive species? Because we're talking about some native plants, and they have that distinctive aroma. But another aroma that folks might associate with Southern California is
eucalyptus.
The eucalyptus tree.
Yeah, and I'm glad you've segued there. One of the problems with Torrey Pines, I mentioned before, we have about 470 species of plants that we know from there. About 30% of them are non-native species. It's a huge problem. A lot of these species are real competitive, especially when we disturb things in former agricultural areas or where we're building or putting in roads or that kind of stuff. And these things are really competitive, and they show up in these areas, and they'll squeeze out native plants. And a lot of people say, well, you know, that's part of nature. You know, there's competitive, you know, whatever, and that's just the way things go. But
they're not supposed to be here.
Well, that's true. I mean, they philosophically, you know, you can look at it as a, well, shoot, you know, we're here, our culture's here, we're sort of changing environments, and they're adapted to our sort of thing. But really what it does is it changes the systems that evolved here, and you get a plant that's so competitive, you know, something like a rhododonax or some of the mustards, black mustard and things like that, and they'll turn an area where you may have, you know, 150 species, plant species, to an area that has one or two species, and there's sort of a whole collapse in that small area with the insects, with the bird use, with the reptile use, all that sort of thing. So you're really wiping out a very rich, interesting system that sort of evolved with coastal San Diego County, and you're changing something that I think is biologically important and aesthetically really important.
Can that be detrimental to the Torrey Pine itself?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we're dealing with a non-native grass that just showed up about 15 years ago called annual veldt grass. And it first showed up, and we have, you know, multiple species of non-native grasses, mostly from the Mediterranean region, that we don't worry about because they've been here forever. They're kind of already, the damage has been done with them. But this new species is really effective at colonizing areas that Torrey Pines also use, and they likely exclude Torrey Pine seedlings from growing and stuff like that. So that's one of the reasons we're working really hard to reduce the abundance of that species. I don't think we'll ever wipe it out, but we try to keep its abundance low so that not only Torrey Pine seedlings can do well, but also other herb flora that are typical of the Torrey Pines habitat.
And then how does that grass get there? I mean, are they, does fire clear a path for them?
And there's all kinds of ways for non-native plants to get there. And most of them were introduced for a particular reason. The veldt grass, it's kind of a mystery because it's not very pretty. It's not, you know, it could have just shown up on somebody visiting from South Africa who was hiking in the reserve and it fell off their socks and that happened. It's unlikely that it was introduced for any other reason, but it's kind of a mystery. Some plants, like we have a fairly new one that's invading the lagoon area called tall wheatgrass, Eletrigia pontica, and we think it was introduced as an erosion control that somebody sort of in a misguided attempt to control erosion after a fire, and it washed down, and now it's taking over a portion of our salt marsh at Torrey Pines. So a lot of our problem plants were actually human-induced for other reasons, good or bad.
How do you guys handle fire at Torrey Pines?
That's a good question. And a difficult question. One of our sort of looming things is how to manage basically in a fire-prone ecosystem with a lot of development very close by. And everybody's struggling with this. Torrey Pines is a little bit of a special case because everything at Torrey Pines is protected and everything's rare. So any sort of fuel management or stuff like that that you'd like to do in the reserve is going to cause pretty significant impacts. And there's also sort of a philosophical question is, you know, this place that was paid for by taxpayers to protect habitat and preserve all these species, do we really, you know, reward people who've built next to this area that was preserved for the greater public by reducing the habitat quality to provide them some fire protection? And I'm sure we're going to go down that road, and we probably will offer some clearing, but it's really, really a touchy and tricky issue. Torrey hasn't burned significantly in a long time. We've had a few little spot fires here and there. We've done some prescribed burns. It hasn't burned in a long time. It probably doesn't need to burn for a long time. Chaparral, I think more and more people are realizing, does just fine on its own for, you know, a long period of time. And it doesn't look like we're losing any sort of fire-favored species because of the lack of fire. We are planning for wildfire, and I think most of it is, you know, protect our important structures and areas and try to protect the public as best we can and get out of the way.
And I would imagine one of the most important structures there is the visitor center, the Ellen Browning Scripps structure.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of our big concerns is both the Guy Fleming House and the Scripps structure. And one of the lucky things is they were well designed as far as fire resistance. I mean, they're mostly out of stucco and heavy timber, and really we don't feel like we have to do as much or very much fuel reduction around them because of their construction. That said, you know, we do worry about it, and we have a gel unit and stuff we'd bring up, and I think we'd much rather use some sort of structure-based fire-resistant type thing like a foam or a gel and some minimal clearing rather than do these big draconian clearing areas because we're going to lose a lot of habitat. I mean, we've estimated that if we went with the city standard for fuel modification in the sort of urban wildland interface, it would be about 40 acres of impacts. So that's a lot considering it's a 1,600-acre reserve. It's in the coastal zone. Every single habitat's protected there. We have multiple listed species. It's a really special area, and because of that, it's difficult to do things like offer fire protection.
What are some of the biggest Torrey Pine species? And I know when it comes to Torrey Pines, you're not talking about sizes like the big Doug firs and redwoods that you get to the north. But can you talk about some of the larger tree specimens you have there?
You know, our biggest individuals are in the shady canyons that are protected from the ocean breezes and stuff like that and get a lot of moisture. And I'm saying, you know, on the order of 100 feet, something like that. They get real big. Like I said, in those protected areas, they sort of lay low and spend a lot more energy on roots and wind avoiding in some of the real exposed areas. So there's a real diversity of heights and sizes.
Would it be fair to say that Torrey Pines spend more time on their roots and less time on exposure because of the elements?
Well, I would think so. I mean, it's real key for Torrey Pines to set down a solid root system, and part of that's because the environment. You know, this coastal San Diego business is some years you get some rain and some years you don't get any. And I think somebody had quoted the thing about San Diego weather is it's entirely unpredictable, at least in the amount of precipitation you're going to get in any given year. So we've even seen with trees planted in landscaped areas in people's yards and stuff like that that get watered for a number of years. And then we have some sort of water conservation urgings and we turn off the water. And it's those trees that almost immediately get weak and suffer and get bark beetle problems because they're not as well adapted to the ones that have adapted to years of, you know, plentiful rainfall and then multiple years of no rainfall and sort of adapted to the rhythm of what San Diego climate is. So, yeah, the root system is real important and the architecture is real important. And it's real important that they sort of find that on their own.
There's a couple of websites we want to talk about. One, of course, is the Docent Society, and that's torrypine.org.
Right.
Torrypine.org, and the docents there are fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those people work really hard, and they're really knowledgeable, a bunch of really smart, great folks. And if we really lean heavily on volunteer work in our whole system, in the state park system, and that's sort of in some ways the backbone of our system. And, I really urge you to look at their website. It's got great information on biology and natural resources and ecology and cultural resources also. And it's a great bunch of people that really carry us.
And they lead a lot of the tours and hikes around the park as well.
Correct. Yeah, I'd like to say one of the things we're really looking for is to expand our volunteer base. We're sort of having ever-shrinking budgets and shrinking staff, and we really are limited in the resources we have, even in, our fairly wealthy county and in the fairly wealthy portion of the county where Torrey Pines is. So we're really looking for volunteers, and especially dedicated volunteers, folks that come out once a month or every other month and in groups and stuff like that. That's a really powerful thing. It's great when we have Earth Day and we have large groups of people, and those are fun. But the real bones of this is to get out and come every month, come work with us.
And then there's the Torrey Pines Association. They're putting together an endowment for you guys, correct?
Right. And that's one of the things. Most of our funding now comes from special funds, and it's spotty, and we'll get a park bond, and we'll get money that we have to spend in a relatively quick thing. And one of the things we lack is sort of day-to-day money just to keep up the basic stuff, keeping steady work on the weeds and that kind of thing. And the Torrey Pines Association is putting together an endowment basically to fund a lot more, maintenance-type stuff and to fund, special projects and all kinds of things. It's really, really going to be a great help to us, and it's probably the future of the way we're going to manage public space and open space.
So the Torrey Pines Association, their website is torreypinesplural.org.
Correct.
And Torrey, by the way, that's T-O-R-R-E-Y. Mm-hmm. It's not T-O-R-I.
Right. Yeah, named after John Torrey, who was a botanist from Columbia.
From Columbia?
Columbia University.
Oh.
Columbia.
New York, yeah, Columbia University.
The Torrey Pines were discovered by another great botanist, C.C. Perry, and he named it after one of his mentors, John Torrey, who I can't remember. I think there was a legend about him never ever getting to see the Torrey or something like that. But, Perry was also a great botanist and has a bunch of native plants named after him as well.
It's funny how people get their names applied to species or mountains.
Oh, yeah.
TorreyPines.org is the website for the Torrey Pines Association.
Yeah. And I'd also like to add, if you're interested in volunteering and any kind of stuff, helping with natural resource management or trails maintenance or anything like that, you're welcome to give me a call also. My email is Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, at parks.ca.gov, or give me a call, 619-278-3785.
That's Darren at parks.ca.gov.
Correct.
Darren at parks.ca.gov. And a phone number they can reach you at is 619-278-3785. 619-278-3785. Again, the website for the Torrey Pines Association, that's torreypines.org, T-O-R-R-E-Y. And the Docent Society is torreypine.org, singular.
Correct. Great opportunity. This is fun. I always love talking about Torrey. We have our district goes from Borderfield State Park up to Carlsbad State Beach, and we have a number of parks there that we'd love to have volunteers in. So if any of you are interested in areas, if you live closer to Borderfield or you live closer to Carlsbad, we'd love to have you as volunteers, and we'd love to have you visiting our parks.
And that's all part of the San Diego Coast District.
Correct.
Of California State Parks.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes Old Town as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, come to Old Town too. We actually have a little native plant garden that the San Diego River folks are working on with the Native Plant Society. It's pretty slick, so come check that down and have a margarita too.
And there's one more inland park also in that district, correct?
San Pasquale Battlefields. It's a really neat park. The witch fire blew through there. Anyway, blew through there, so we've been closed for a while, but I think we're getting ready to open back up there. And that's a fantastic park. There's a great trail, and we have tons of neat reptiles and stuff there, and great butterflies, too, if you're there in the spring.
Mexican War, that was General Kearney? just east of Escondido in the San Pasqual Valley. Uh-huh. And again, that's all part of the San Diego Coast District of California State Parks, and that includes Torrey Pines, among others. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What have you learned that you didn't expect to learn by spending time at Torrey Pines?
I think one of the things I've really learned, it's the first time I've gotten to be a land manager for a significant amount of time. It's not really significant. 7 years isn't a whole heck of a lot of time. But just to see what a place looks like for a number of years and see how things change with different rainfall, with different conditions, and really see how dynamic a small place like Torrey Pines is. It really changes a lot. One of the things I think I talked earlier about adaptive management is you really set off on one course trying to do something like, you know, do a habitat restoration project, and darned if the weather or some situation or some new plant or some other thing changes what you were trying to do or changes the direction of what you're trying to do. And you really have to be flexible, and you have to keep your eyes open, and you have to look at things multiple times over different seasons. And so I think it's really, really taught me to be more flexible and more appreciative of those changes.
And as a native, do you feel like you've connected even more with this
region? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great. One of the great things, and people tend to only look at wildflowers in the spring in Southern California and stuff, and it really does, it gives you to get out there, you know, even in the summer and in the fall when it looks like everything's dead. There's species that bloom all different times of year, and insects that come out, and different, it really is amazing. And, you know, sometimes the best time of year is when the most unexpected things happen. And I love the fall for one of those reasons. It's one of the best times to be a naturalist or to spend time out in the open space because, I don't know, it's a really powerful time of year.
Next time you make it out to Santa Rosa Island, you got to let me know.
Definitely.
Darren Smith, environmental scientist and the Natural Resources Program Manager for Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve, just north of La Jolla, and the larger San Diego Coast District of California State Parks. Hey, Darren, really enjoyed having you on the program today. Thanks for coming by.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time, and be well.
Excellent.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. Thanks again to Darren Smith from Torrey Pines State Reserve for joining us, and thank you, Darren, for your ongoing service to the state of California with your work with state parks and promoting conservation and the preservation of the coastal habitat at Torrey Pines and elsewhere. And a couple of great organizations to reach out to for more information about Torrey Pines State Reserve are the Torrey Pines Docent Society and the Torrey Pines Association. Now, the Docent Society is made up of volunteers who lead nature walks, staff the visitor center, help maintain trails, educate kids about the wonders of the outdoors at Torrey Pines, prepare interpretive publications, and work on special projects like bird counts and planting seedlings. They're a busy lot, and the website for the Torrey Pines Docent Society is www.torreypine.org. That's www.torreypine.org. Singular, TORREY pine.org. Now, the Torrey Pines Association encourages public interest in and support for the preservation of the Torrey Pine trees and the state reserve by raising funds for special projects and by publishing informative material about Torrey Pines State Reserve. They do a great job, and their website is www.torreypines.org, plural, www.torreypines.org. And you can also reach out to Darren Smith with California State Parks at area code 619-278-3785. That's 619-278-3785. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. And as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, go ahead and send me an email, tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website, www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Or just go to the FM 94.9 homepage and click on the Tree Huggers International logo. I'm Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation. It's on the way next. on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.